All right, everybody, welcome back. We've got a special episode for you. Special episode alert. Today is our 2021 bold predictions episode. What does that mean? We are going to make, we being Andrew, myself, and a special guest, Carly Riley, who was the finance director on our 2020 presidential run and a complete superstar in many, many ways. We are going to make some predictions for the year. And here's the deal. The winner, if you get them right, we're gonna bet on them. So if you're listening to these, use the hashtag YangSpeaksWager and let us know what we should bet on them, because I think it's more fun if you guys tell us what dumb things we do if we're right or wrong. So tune in, the Yang Speaks special bold predictions for 2021 with Carly Riley coming up right now. Welcome back. We have a special episode alert for Yang Speaks. This is Zach Grauman. I'm one of the co-hosts of Andrew Yang Speaks. And this is, as of right now, the last episode of 2020. What a year it has been. And look, Andrew doesn't take many days off. He's actually not taking the day off today, but he's taking the day off from the podcast. So you're stuck with me. But I will say this. The last time that yours truly hosted an episode of Andrew Yang's podcast, of Yang Speaks, it was a top 10 episode. So I don't want to say it, but maybe I should say it, that I seem to be driving most of the downloads here. So I love you guys. Thanks for at least pretending to tune in. And more importantly, the reason that it actually performed well last time is because we had good guests. And the guest we've got for today is the wonderful Carly Riley. Hello, Carly.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So Carly was our finance director on the Andrew Yang for President campaign, is now working at a venture fund, doing some pretty amazing stuff. But why she's here and what we want to do today to keep this interesting is we wanted to get out in the universe some bold predictions for 2021. So we're going to make some predictions, and Andrew is making some predictions for 2021. Which I'm excited about. Carly, I don't know if you're excited about it. I dragged you on here, but I'm glad you made it.
Yeah, I'm excited for 2021 for sure.
That's a good point.
I think it can only, well, I'm going to say it can only go up from here, but I have.
Debatable, but we hope
debatable.
So, right?
Yeah, yeah, we'll see.
A couple of things before we get in, though. I am in the best mood possible. We're recording this on Tuesday, December 29th, and my Buffalo Bills just stomped on the New England Patriots. Stopped. And it was amazing. So I'm wearing my Allen Diggs 2020 t-shirt. If you don't like football, I don't care. The Bills have been terrible for like 20 years, my whole adult life. And it was a beautiful feeling to watch the Patriots, who have been amazing for my whole adult life, to get embarrassed on national television. We could have put up 50 points. We didn't. We rested our starters in the fourth quarter. But it was amazing.
And Stephon Diggs is exceptionally handsome. So even if you don't like football, it's worth looking up some of the players. Yeah, just for that.
We'll move on. But I think this is going to be fun. So, Carly, let's start with what I got from Andrew on Andrew's bold predictions for 2021. Because I don't agree with all of them.
Ooh, all right.
From Andrew, number one, ranked choice voting in 2021 will become a major policy and will arrive in cities and states around the country. For those of you who don't know what ranked choice voting is, instead of, we talk about it a lot in this podcast, but just as a primer, instead of voting for one candidate and pulling the lever, you would vote for, you would rank the candidates in the race up to as many, depending on the state. So you would rank all five of them. And then what it will do is, if your person who you voted for number one doesn't make the top five, let's say, your vote doesn't count for number one, but your number two vote would then be counted for someone else's number one. So basically, like, nets out all the craziness. It's a very fascinating policy. Andrew and I have been very, very supportive of it. I think you like this idea too, Carly.
Yeah, I do like it. Remind me where it already exists.
It exists.
New York City.
In New York City this year for the first time. It has existed in Maine and I believe Oregon. There's a few cities, and Andrew's prediction is that it starts to go around the country. And so, Carly, agree, disagree, thoughts on the first Yang prediction for 2021?
Agree. I like it as a policy. It's interesting for me to know that it only just became a reality in New York City. I thought it had been around for longer. So that does suggest to me that, you know, it's picking up steam.
I'm looking this up. Which states have ranked choice voting?
And I mean, I'll be curious too. It sounds like Yang's predicting it to happen on like a city and state level, not a federal level, which again, agree with that. I don't think we're seeing it on the national level within the next year.
Berkeley, California was the one I missed. A couple places in Colorado, Oregon, and Maine are on here.
So it's like a liberal
Minneapolis
thing.
Is using it. It's a very liberal thing. A lot of Minnesota, a lot of Colorado. And then upcoming, you've got Alaska, Massachusetts. Mm. I would say I disagree. I think it'll be more popular. So it's tough to argue that because you already have a bunch of states. But does it take off? I think what's going to happen is ranked choice voting to me gives a little power to the little guy and gives a little power to substance. It rises for third parties, for outsiders. I think if ranked choice voting was on the presidential campaign, Andrew would have done very well. Because I think a lot of people liked him. And if their favorites were dropping out, or they maybe more people would have voted for him, number one, knowing that it wouldn't necessarily be a risky vote. But also a lot of people liked him. It incentivized people to run on policy and not like political theater. That said, if you're an incumbent or let's call it the establishment's pick and you've got the money and the endorsements and the TV ads and the powers that be behind you, you might be able to, you would see this as a threat to your way of life, to your political dominance, and you would probably find ways to claim that it's like in New York, they just claim that it's racist because it's an extra step in voting and that hurts certain communities of color, which is, I don't think there's any data to back that up, but you could claim there's claims like that being made. So I don't know. My thought is that I think it's going to meet more opposition because you're actually challenging the establishment by this.
I've not heard that argument. That makes no sense to me. You're still showing up to the polls and now you're putting 1, 2, 3 instead of whatever we were doing previously. That to me seems like a stupid argument that's being concocted by people who want to keep this from being a thing, but maybe I'll be proved wrong. I haven't looked into that. I'm interested in the idea of whether or not it really does cut down on like political theater. I think celebrities probably do better in a ranked choice voting system. And
really?
I don't know, wouldn't you think like name recognition? It's like, all right, I know my number one guy, my number two guy is that other name that I heard of.
Oh, okay.
You know? And like, I just think of somebody like Trump. Obviously, he won in 2016 anyways, but like...
But I would say Trump is different than a celebrity. You know what I'm saying? Like, Trump was saying things that... there was a general consensus that a lot of people did not like Donald Trump because he was saying things that they thought were racist or didn't agree with or thought he was bucking the party. So I thought he would have been a lot of people's one, but a lot more people's last. And so
sure,
Trump would probably lost in ranked choice voting. But I get what you're saying. Someone with name ID is going to do better if they're not as polarizing.
Right, right. Exactly. I think it does help somebody with name ID. And I don't know, political theater can be a good way to get name ID. Your point is that it also makes you more polarized and therefore
like if you're nasty,
more polarizing figure.
Right?
Yeah,
if you're a jerk. Is what my point is. Like a lot,
if
you're attacking all the other candidates, maybe that knocks down your opponent a peg, but also knocks you down too.
I'm into it. Look, I'm into ranked choice voting. I think it makes sense. I think it'll gain some steam in 2021. I'm with Andrew on this one.
All right. I think it'll gain steam, but I'm not as high on it as Andrew is. As much as I love it personally, I just think it'll hit a lot more resistance. Especially if somebody's like losing their power because of it and has a pulpit and has a mouthpiece to make a case. Okay. Andrew's prediction number two, he says we get cash relief in 2021 multiple times, either multiple bills or recurring cash relief. So you're getting multiple monthly payments. I think I agree with this one. It seems like where we're standing now, cash relief is going to happen. Not a lot, $600 a person. And I think up to $1,800 or $1,200 per family. I don't think it's finalized yet. And there's some more going on in the Senate as we speak. But I do think this happens. And I think the Biden administration will be more likely to drive some things through here. And it seems to be relatively bipartisan. Thoughts, Carl?
I mean, look, this also depends on what happens in the Georgia Senate race, right? If Democrats have the Senate, I think there's a much stronger case to be made for this. If Republicans keep the Senate, I think they're going to be like, things are getting better. not worse. You know, employment's opening back up. You know, we already had to fight to get this through. I don't know that mm-hmm. they're going to be into multiple payments.
Interesting. It is a shame where this the country's burning and we're still debating over what little scraps.
Absurd. It is absurd. I do not know how Congress like goes to bed at night feeling okay, looking at the bread lines that are happening, like looking at everything that's going on and like what people are dealing with and just being like, well, you know, we're going to, whatever, this is not a new take, but we're going to just push. Our fight is to push through like a tax write-off for your martini lunch or whatever the heck that Republican add-on was for this bill.
And you know, it's tough to even blame your rank and file Congress members because they don't even see the bill till, you know, 3 hours before voting starts. And it's a 1700 page bill, right? Like it is literally it's Mitch McConnell, Nancy Pelosi and Donald Trump. Right. I mean, there's a few other big players, but that's the game right now.
Yeah. Like, even well, the this is what I learned from Yang Speaks. Yeah. I did not know any of this until y'all had that guest who explained that that's how it works. And you're like, oh, well that explains that explains why our democracy is so messed up.
It's heartbreaking for those of you out there struggling. We're sending love, which is not money, but we are trying to send money through a number of efforts because talk's cheap. All right, third thing from Andrew Yang, prediction for 2021. This is an interesting one. He says a third party emerges.
Disagree. I'm going to disagree
with the boss.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree from the standpoint that, like, look, it depends on what we mean by emerge. You know what I mean? I think we might start to see whispers of something. But I think in terms of, like, a major contender, I think we're a couple years out from that.
I think, well, why do you think that? Because it's the duopoly is too strong?
Yeah, I think the duopoly is really strong. I mean, I think there's interest in it, but I think, I just think it takes time to build those kinds of movements. And I don't think it's done in a year necessarily, especially a year where things are maybe getting a bit better because the virus is,
true. And Joe is a moderate.
Exactly. Yeah.
With theoretically less polarizing, but not necessarily. We haven't really talked about this. I don't think, I mean, Andrew's floated it with a number of guests, but Andrew and I have not talked about the third party that much. There's a lot of Yang Yang that say, Andrew, you should run for a third party because the Democrats, Republicans never let you win or they're just a mess and that sort of thing. And look, I have a lot of qualms with both parties. But I do think if Andrew ran as a third party candidate for president, let's call it 2024, he would lose. He'd probably lose badly and it would not be great. And then that party would probably die. I think the way a third party emerges is people have to run at the local level, prominent people at the local level on these types of things. And that's where I think you're right, Carly, that it will not be a year thing. It will take some time, but I don't know.
Look, I'm all for breaking up the duopoly. I think at this point they are industries and as long as they are industries with their own profit motivation, which is what they each kind of have, you're kind of doomed. Yeah. So I think we have a serious need for one. Maybe that's why, you know, I want one. So I don't want to get my hopes up. I think we're ripe for it, but our system just also like from our founding, we've had two parties, right? Like our system is set up to have two. So I think if a third party emerges, it's going to have to replace one of the existing two parties because we're just not set up to be a system with three competitive parties.
Which is why I think Andrew's predictions are interesting. With ranked choice voting would set the stage for multiple political parties because you have a real chance to win.
See, he's so comprehensive.
Yeah, it's true.
This is you work for Andrew long enough and you realize like everything starts to connect with everything else and he has like a cohesive worldview. And this is why he should run things because he sees things holistically.
It's so funny, like, you know, you want to bring things to your boss, like new ideas or things like this. But I've always learned with Andrew, like if you're gonna bring some to Andrew, you better be ready to freaking defend it. Cause he'll just school you. He'll rip you apart if you're wrong and not like in a mean way.
He'll just very systematically lay it all out exactly like, as it's supposed to be immediately. You're like, cool. I'm going to go back into my little hole and just do what you told me to.
I will. Yes. I see you've cut to the core here. I'm thoroughly embarrassed. Next thought. Which is, and he's a, and the thing is that he's a very good listener too. It's not like he's going to do that. If you're right, you're golden. You know, he's like, that makes logical sense.
He's a great boss. He's good to learn from.
But you better become ready to play. Better be ready to play.
Speaking of ready to play, what are your predictions?
My first one is that we fully reopen. Vaccinated society, essentially, back to business, September 2021, we start the roaring 20s. And you start travel, stores are opening, sports, dating, people get orgies. All excited.
I was seeing an article about this.
That people are going to have orgies?
Well, because orgies became a big thing in the 1920s, apparently, which, again, was after the 1918 pandemic. So you see this, like... That, like, part of the Roaring Twenties in the 1920s was a result of the pandemic of 1918.
Just being pent up.
And it was like, you know, you had the flapper dresses. This was like the one era of sort of like women's sexual liberation, like pre the pill, of like little flapper dresses and the rest of it. And apparently orgies were a thing. So you're saying September 2021 is when
that is wild. But I do predict a 21st century version of the Roaring Twenties starting September 2021.
Okay. I think it'll be earlier. Okay, I agree, right? I think clearly we're going to open up again in 2021 and it's going to be madness. Madness on the dating apps. But I think it'll come sooner because we have... So all the high-risk people are being... They're trying to get them all vaccinated in the first half of the year, right? If the high-priority people have been vaccinated by June, say, in those first 6 months, like if they fulfill that timeline, then... I mean, really, try and stop people from, like, going and raging in the summer. Like, and, you know, we don't have to just talk about the party scene. Obviously, there's work and other things.
Yeah. So there's twofold challenges on this where it's, there's, governments are forcing things to be closed, which we can agree or disagree with, depending on the location and timing and things like that. But there's also just, there is a lack of demand, right? Like, right now, people are, there's plenty of restaurants in the South that are allowed to stay open, mm-hmm. and they're hurting because people are not going out to mm-hmm. eat or traveling, and tourism's down and all these things. So this a notion on the right in particular that the government is forcing things to be terrible is not fully true. There is a global pandemic and people are scared. So I do think if you can get the fear down, you then have a better demand that will force governments to follow suit. I don't think governments are really set up to lead in the 21st century right now. So I think, I'd love it to be earlier. I think, I guess I meant governments will see how good summer goes and then start to open back up in the fall and feel better about the numbers going down and the vaccinations going up.
What's your first thing? What's your, like, what is the thing you miss most, Zach? What are you trying to do?
I think I'll just go to the Buffalo Bills stadium in the offseason.
Oh, I set that one up so perfectly.
Just to sit there and soak it in. We're finally good and I can't go to a game. You know what I'm saying? I bought season tickets. I'm not rich. I just spend the little spending money I have on the cheap season tickets and I split them with my brother. But I can't go. It's so yeah, I think I would just show up in Buffalo.
And just hang
out. Anyway, what's the first thing you do?
Oh, I asked this question. I should have been prepared to have it flipped on me. I don't know. I'd probably just like a big old restaurant indoor scene with like all my favorite people. Like, let's just go all hug each other up inside somewhere. I don't know.
You're going to have the orgy. Jesus, Carl.
Well, no. Like a friend.
You heard it here. That was weird.
Oh, boy.
Gosh, we might have to cut this out. Okay. thank you, Carl. All right. What's what's your prediction? First prediction.
Joe Biden, by executive order, cancels, let's call it $10,000 of federal student loan debt. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's so much that's interesting about this. I wanted to
have an episode of Andrew on this. We have not yet. So let's crack this can of worms.
Okay. There's so much here. Again, will he do this? Recently, he's indicated maybe he wants to try and do like canceling student loan debt via like legislation as opposed to by executive order, in which case, again, we're kind of waiting around to see what happens at the Georgia Senate runoff. But I think the case for canceling student loan debt is even stronger if you do it by executive order, right? Because, you know, people are kind of mixed on the whole canceling student loan debt.
Yes, they are.
Question, because they say it's regressive. They say you're just benefiting, you know, the elites anyway.
Correct.
And my feeling is like, look, first of all, it depends how you do it. If you only cancel undergraduate debt, it actually becomes, you know, it's benefiting a lot of people who are in the middle and like lower middle classes as well. And frankly, something that's helping the middle class right now is certainly something we should be thinking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if you're saying should we cancel student loan debt or should we pass another stimulus check for folks, I'm 100% going stimulus check. That's where you're going to hit, you know, people who have less money, poor people. Yeah. I'd rather give cash.
But you think Biden's going to do this thing. And why is it a good idea?
Well, this is what I'm saying. So it's a good idea because it is something, right? Because he can do it. It looks like he can do it by executive order, right?
Yeah.
That's why it's so awesome. Because look, at the end of the day, it is a stimulus, right? You have a lot of people. There's been a lot made of this, right? Like people our age not buying homes because they're laden with student loan debt. You can take that burden off people's backs. We are going to spend money more. We are going to engage in the economy more. So it is a stimulus. It's not the perfect stimulus in my mind. But the problem is the perfect stimulus that I want just took 8 months to pass, and I'm not convinced we're going to get Republicans
not
on board
just
with
one
it again.
Joe Biden stroke of the pen. Right.
It's also just so interesting. The whole argument about whether or not he can do this by executive order is a really interesting one. Like, this basically goes back. The reason people are making this argument is because of this decision Obama made in 2010, where he cut out all the middlemen, like the private middlemen in federal, like with federal student loan debt. And it's just such a good example of like these little things that presidents do that probably didn't mean anything to us at the time that later on have huge implications. And it's like,
yes.
I've been reading
so
much about this.
After Joe Biden, what president wants to be the asshole that says, just kidding, it's not canceled.
Yeah.
you know, it just won't happen.
They just, you know, basically the Department of Justice or the Department of Education can just decide like not to collect this money. Now, some people, I think Warren or others, I think want it to be like all canceled. That's right. Going a little far to me. I think you cap it at 10K or maybe you there's like it's means tested, though. I don't tend to be a fan of means tested things.
But you could do for only undergraduate, which would avoid
because
a lot of people going to med school or law school don't particularly need it and their jobs will pay for it anyway.
I think you'll only undergraduate. And really, then there are a lot of working class people that you're majorly benefiting. So I'm totally in favor, especially again, if you can do it by executive order, it's something like bring it on. Yeah. Like just like, you know, let's get something happening here.
So I'll say this. I had around 200 grand in student loans when I was 22 or so. And most of those were not federal. I was in that horrible zone where your parents made some money. So you couldn't qualify for any public loans, but not enough to ever pay for college. So you had to go to college on just all debt and all private debt, which you know, I understand why, but it's still never fun. And we're talking like you graduate day one and like your first payment's due pretty quickly and it's $800 to $1,000, right? That's a massive payment. So for me, I worked them off. Like I sold my soul for 10 years on Wall Street and, it was rough. I didn't make a lot of money at first, but over time I took every bonus I got, which wasn't as big as people would think a Wall Street bonus was, but it was sizable to eventually get 200 grand and knock it out over essentially a decade. So I would be very, very happy for all the people getting out of debt. I would be very, very happy. I think from an economic standpoint, I think it's the right, like if you're trying to get the weight off of a younger generation, it probably makes the most sense. But it also would frustrate me because there's a reason I didn't major in theater and things I was passionate about because I was a theater nerd. There's a reason I didn't major in stuff that wasn't going to pay the bills. Is a reason I took that job on Wall Street. Now, generally, I liked a lot of my people there and I did learn a lot, but I wouldn't have picked that. I would have worked at Teach for America, I think.
Wow, how the world would be different.
Me.
You never would have found different. Andrew Yang.
That's probably true. Who knows?
Who knows?
But my point is, I mean, and maybe people listening to this like boo-hoo Zach, like people are struggling, which you're probably right. But I imagine the people who have paid it off or have worked their ass off and made life choices that were really challenging and maybe against their wills and passions and best interests in many ways to get out of debt. It is like come on.
Oh,
like,
I
really,
fully
know?
Expect everybody who's paid off their debt to be jealous and they have every right to be. We should still do it in lieu of nothing else being possible because we
and
have
a divided
Senate.
And if I'm that guy,
so.
I'm the person that should be the most jealous in terms of like didn't come for money, worked his ass off to pay them off, you know?
Though you weren't going to be helped with this anyway because you didn't have federal loans.
That's
so
true.
You're sort of out of the question
That's true.
You know, in but any case, because we can only really cancel federal debt.
But yeah. I'm saying whatever, just do it. Like at point, like what the analogy I heard is like, I don't know. It's like everybody else should suffer because I had to is not
right. A really is a terrible way to live your life.
Society. Yeah, and it sucks.
Yeah, just start meditating or something and get over that.
But I do think people have made dumb decisions with their money in terms of there's people that have gone to very expensive schools with no foreseeable path forward afterwards.
I also don't think
a ton of debt.
You know, you and I were both in this position. You're 18 years old. You're kind of following the people are telling you it's so important to go to a good school. There's social pressure around what college you go to, sort of where I was, for instance. And you're 18. Like, what the heck do you know? You have, like, no concept of, like, what it teach to leave with debt. And I think this is just something
that's... We don't teach financial literacy.
No, we teach nothing. So nobody's equipped. This actually will tie well into my next prediction. But, you know, none of us are equipped. I am curious to know what people have been doing during this time where there has been this moratorium on student loan payments. I still have student loan debt. And I've been fortunate enough to have a job, but I actually haven't been... I haven't been making my payments because there's no interest accruing because I've been sort of under this idea of like cash is king right now. So I've been saving that money, but I kind of wanted on, I was like waiting for the apocalypse to come and I wanted to like, you know, have my shekels saved for like, you know, food shotgun. Or whatever. Yeah. Well, exactly.
I'm Y2K stocked up. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. So, so that was sort of my thinking on it though. And now I'm waiting cause I'm like, well, man, if he wipes this stuff out,
that's fair.
You know, I would be super mad if I like, bold
prediction, Carly Riley, is that we wipe out 10K student loan debt. You guys, if you have 10K in federal loans, better hope
Don't pay yet.
Wait, apparently.
Give us like the first 100 days to see what happens.
This podcast is sponsored by Helix Sleep. I have always been a mattress guy. I thought if you're going to spend 8 hours doing something, you should pay attention to what you're doing it on. That's why I love the Helix Sleep product. It is made for me. I am someone who sleeps on my back. I do not sleep hot. I like a firm mattress. And so when I took the Helix Sleep quiz, I wound up with a Helix Dawn model. And it's been fantastic, not just for me, but for my kids who seek it out of the entire house. Don't want to take my word for it? Helix has been awarded the number one mattress pick by GQ and Wired magazine, and they have a 100-night free trial and 10 to 15-year warranties baked in. That's confidence in your product, and if you get on a Helix Sleep mattress, you will see why they are so confident. Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/yang and use code HELIXPARTNER20. This is their best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
All right, here's my second prediction. I'm predicting a significant fall in our educational institutions, specifically college, while we're talking about college.
Does that mean like lower enrollment?
Just the current generation just got a raw deal where like they were supposed to, and it just like cut to the bone of what you actually pay for in college and what matters. So these kids are having to pay like $60K a year. They're not getting a college experience because they're not on campus. They're not growing socially and that sort of thing. And they are taking all their classes online, usually at home, or if they're in the college town, they are distance and that sort of thing. And I think it'll change the way employers and people look at the purpose of college. If you want to go for like a social development situation, that'll be a luxury item, like summer camp for kids who are, you know, leaving their home at 18. But if you want to go and just like get to work, there will be way more options in the basically in the marketplace from because of technology and its improvement. And I would even argue that your big tech companies will enter this space, your Amazon's, Facebook, your YouTube, Google situation where, and I think Scott Galloway, someone we really love, has talked a lot about this in the past. It's like, that's one of the only places that those companies can actually get sizable growth that's ripe for disruption in the tech space. And it's been hard to do in the past, but those brands have all been hurt. And look at now, like sports has changed, college sports has changed. That tide is shifting, I think, in terms of how we look at college athletes. So look, that's my prediction. I think these education, the allure of educational institutions, as someone who went to one with somewhat of an allure, I think it's going to start fading. I think all, people always pay for like the best of the best, maybe, but I think it'll change.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I like this. I think higher education so desperately needs a shakeup. What that looks like, I you know, who knows exactly. I think I'm totally with Andrew on the fact that we need fewer people going to four-year colleges, and we need to weigh up the trade school quota and getting people into jobs that are less ripe for automation. I think the second piece to this is just a need to democratize higher education. And you brought up Scott Galloway, so I'm going to talk about him too. I have to usually limit myself to how much I can talk about Scott Galloway, or I would do basically nothing but talk about Scott Galloway. Okay. So you've opened the way, which is I think Section 4 is his newest venture. And it's all about democratizing higher education. His point is we have stopped recognizing like that professors and these educational institutions have stopped seeing themselves as public servants and started to see themselves as luxury goods, and that is so backwards, right? He talks about Harvard has this like 39, whatever it is, billion dollar endowment or whatever the heck the Harvard endowment is. And the admission officer, you know, the head of admissions is like bragging about the fact that they could double the size of the incoming freshman class, but they don't, you know, saying like, oh, there are so many good applicants. And his point is like, why don't you? Like double the size of the incoming freshman class then. You have more money than you could ever need. Why are we not like bringing more sort of smart, qualified people into this fold? Why are we treating this like such a luxury item?
$41
billion. $41
billion.
Like, that's they can insane. Afford.
People don't really understand how big a billion is, but they've so got he's, 40 of them.
Scott's very much in favor of getting more people Ivy League educations, put whatever stock in that you can. And then I'm a big proponent of then also getting more people into trade schools and trade programs. I think we totally need to rethink this whole thing. And I think you're right that we will have to move in that direction. The role of big tech is interesting. I've looked very little into that, but
I think they're looking for growth. They're like, they're getting into media, and I think education is a big one too. And one that they can do, like, does that mean Amazon starts a university? I don't know. But specifically for certain tech jobs or whatever it is, I mean, you could see this all over the place. Like Facebook trying to bring into their, I mean, whether it's their own company or other tech companies, you get a Facebook certificate in coding or customer service or shit like that. Like, imagine, like, that to me is almost a better brand than Harvard. Like, I got this kid that knows exactly what a tech company like Facebook needs in ad sales, or I've got a liberal arts degree from Harvard. So, I mean, think about that. That's wild.
Yeah, wild. And you're totally right.
And if they're working remotely, and like, do the social skills matter as much? I don't know. Like, that's usually one of the things. You're going to be a Harvard man. You're going to be a Duke man, whatever the hell, or woman, whatever the, you know, you get what I'm saying. And that there's this sort of brand and allure to the university. I don't think that's going to matter as much. And I think my prediction is that it happens way faster than you think. I think it happens. Like, these universities, they'll be fine. They've got billions of dollars in their endowment. They probably have to fire a bunch of people and other things. But I think the traditional educational paths as we know it will start to crumble and shift. That's my prediction. What about you, Carl? Number two.
All right. Number two. I think Robinhood, the trading app, precipitates a
not
financial crisis. Not the charity, which I've also been working with recently. Robinhood, the trading app, causes a financial crisis among millennials, like very similar to the way subprime mortgage lenders messed everything up in the lead up to 2008.
Okay.
This is a little bit of a doomsday.
So for those of you who don't understand what Robinhood is, I'll give you the dumb version, then Carlo will give you the smart version. So Robinhood is a investment app. So you can trade real money in the stock market on your phone. So similar to what E-Trade is or what Fidelity
Schwab they're an electronic broker.
But it's on your phone, and it's designed the way Facebook is. It's designed with Silicon Valley engineers to make it addictive and fun and gamified, except it's real money. So just for those of you who have not downloaded, we are not encouraging you in particular to download Robinhood, but this is a real thing and it's very, very popular.
I would be interested to know what percent of the Yang Speaks audience doesn't know Robinhood, because by the numbers, most of us are on it if we're millennials.
The Yang Speaks audience is diverse, Carl. Don't you do
not
that.
Not just millennials. Sorry.
No offense if you're a standard millennial listening to this, but we go across the spectrum. Keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. Ages, okay, fair.
genders, you name it. All right.
Here's the thing. Robinhood has exploded. So I first downloaded Robinhood in 2014. And I should say, I am a Robinhood user. So this is not to like knock Robinhood wholesale, right? I think the idea that we need more people, like kind of smartly, operative word, invested in the stock market is obvious and true, right? Because you look at wealth inequality, income inequality, so much of this is driven by the fact that such a small percent of Americans participate in the stock market. The problem with Robinhood specifically is they have lured in all of these young people because they were the first platform to say commission-free trading, we won't charge you when you place a trade. And mm-hmm. to the point Zach made, they had this like fun Silicon Valley gamified user interface that triggers all of like the dopamine centers that, you know, Instagram and Facebook, like Facebook
and Instagram trigger. All
it's, so it's a social media app. And the problem right now is you're luring on all these young people who are, myself included, novice investors who don't really know what we're doing. We're pouring a bunch of money into companies like Tesla and Peloton, companies I love, but let's be honest, like they have valuations that are above
stocks.
Their story stocks.
Uber, Tesla.
They have valuations that are above their economic fundamentals. Love Peloton. Love, you know, Tesla's very cool too. But you have Elon Musk literally earlier this year was
said,
like,
don't buy it.
He's just like, oh yeah, I think we're like a little overvalued. Like Musk is the most confident
said,
dude
please
on
don't
the planet.
Buy my company.
And he's like, yeah, I feel like this valuation's like a little high. And like and the stock went up like 40% the next week. Like nobody's paying attention to any, like nobody's listening to anything. So I think we are very clearly in a story stock bubble that is very connected to Robinhood and the Robinhood user base. There's an Instagram like influencer I follow called literally her name is Girl With No Job. And she posted recently on her story, a DM she had received from somebody being like, oh my God, thanks for recommending like Chewy stock. I just invested and it's exploded. Like it's my best stock in the portfolio. And you're like, God, oh, this boy is a case study in bubbles. It's like stock advice from Girl With No Job, who is very
That's
smart.
Terrifying.
This is not a knock on her, but like we are in a bubble with certain stocks. The simple story of 2008, which anybody who watched The Big Short knows, is that subprime mortgage lenders pushed mortgages on a lot of people who couldn't afford them, right? But like, you know, high mortgages that people couldn't afford to pay. And as long as housing prices were going up, this worked fine because people would refinance. They could then continue to pay off their mortgage. It wasn't a problem. And there was this whole narrative that mortgage and home prices will never go down. They'll never fall, right? This was like the great, you know, fraud that was being, the great line that was being like perpetrated. And of course, eventually housing prices did start to fall. People no longer could afford their mortgages. And there was this whole crisis that ensued because these shady brokers had pushed leverage and pushed mortgages on people who couldn't afford them. This is what is happening with Robinhood. Robinhood is pushing people to actively trade way more than is really sensible. But worse, they're pushing margin on people, which means they're giving people access. They're loaning users money. It is very easy to trade on margin with Robinhood. Robinhood will loan you money to make trades, right? Anytime you're loaned money, you have to pay that money back and you have to pay it back with interest. Right now, stocks are going up. So the impact of people trading on margin is not being felt. That will eventually stop. And you are going to have a really, really bad situation where you have young people who didn't really know what they were doing, having traded on margin and being stuck with a bill way beyond what they can afford. They're also pushing people to get into options trading, which is another way riskier, you know, type of trading that a lot of people don't understand. And it's also going to leave people holding the bag. And there are lawsuits around this very fact happening right now. Massachusetts is suing them because they're saying you can't gamify this and push this on people. So that's where it's very similar to 2008. And we're going to have some bad outcomes come 2021.
If they've been loaned money and then they are riding this bull market and making money, is the issue like when things start to go down and they keep getting loan money and then they start losing it? Or have they already made enough money? Are they playing with house money at this point because the market's doing so well?
No, well, this is what connects to they're invested in companies that are eventually going to collapse, or collapse is not the right word. They're invested in companies whose valuations are going to go down because the valuations are way too high. Because
and they haven't cashed out. I see.
Right. Because they're driving it up. And if you start investing in a bull market like this, you get very confident. It's impossible to avoid. I feel it, right? Yep. You're like, maybe I'm kind of good at this. I keep making money. Stocks keep going up. And you have that feeling, like in 2008, the sense that housing prices are never going to go down. You start to feel like stock prices aren't going to go down. Dave Portnoy, I mean, he's doing it to be funny, but he says this all the time.
Barstool guy?
Yeah, Barstool, the founder of Barstool. It's like, stocks can't go down. Stocks only go up. And you see that, oh, like people have that kind of feeling when they ride a huge bull market. And so these valuations are way too high. They're going to go down and people are going to be really financially hurt by it.
So there it is. You heard it from Carly. Robin Hood. And just like the millennial entrance into the financial markets through Robin Hood is going to hit millennials the hardest. And some sort of financial collapse is what you're predicting. I get that right?
Sure. I don't think this will necessarily be something on the scale of 2008, but I think millennials are going to be burned by Robinhood, let's say, that in 2021 when stocks finally start to come back down to a sane level.
Very cool. All right. My third prediction, niche players in the media space starting to emerge. So I think you're already seeing this with the success of a number of podcasts and personalities doing well in that space. But I think it's deeper than that, where it's Substack is a big one for a lot of journalists. And then I think Parler, which is the right-wing social media app. Apparently the tech is pretty terrible, but I think that's just the beginning. I think you're going to have ratings hurt in a lot of these major media companies, which means they'll either start getting desperate and start getting more like hyper-focused and partisan, or people are going to start taking their place. I don't think we end up in a world where everybody subscribes to their own little things. I do think eventually this will be consolidated, and even there may be some even regulation around this, particularly on our social media companies that are driving a lot of the divisiveness. But I do think you're going to have a rise of small and eventually larger new types of media empires. That's my prediction. Thoughts?
Yes. 100%. Curious as to
one of them might be Yang Speaks. Ayo.
Oh, right, well, Yang Speaks would fall into that category of kind of niche. I think what you have happening is this fragmentation, right? You have Matthew Iglesias and Ezra Klein leaving Vox, the media company they built. You have Matt Taibbi leaving Rolling Stone to start a Substack. I mean, you have this kind of Barry Weiss leaving the New York Times. You have this mass exodus of sort of individual reporters. You have this rise in podcasts and Substacks, and so I have a very like curated media diet, you know, like Scott Galloway, who I read of, you know, anytime he has a newsletter. But you know, I follow a lot of Substackers, so at this point, my media diet is very much the one that I curate, and this is working for me for now. But I do think there's something to be said for like bigger organizations that can kind of scoop up these fragmented players and bring them all under one roof. So I think that would be very interesting to see.
News, which is kind of what we're flirting with here. News should not just be entertainment. It should not just be candy. It should not just be what we want. It also needs to be what we need to know. It needs to be vegetables. No one, at least as a kid, you don't love vegetables, but you need to have them. And we haven't gotten that in a long time. And there are journalists out there that are giving it, but there is probably still value in this curation of that. It's why editors used to exist, to kind of balance your diet of news, to keep with my food analogy. So I just think my prediction is that this all gets disrupted. Like, this is the time. Like, Trump was the dam that was holding them together. Him being gone will break it. He may be one of the people that start that. If he goes and starts a social media company for himself, they would be huge, or a media firm or that sort of thing. And that'll cause a lot of responses. I'm not sure, but I think feeling pretty strong that something happened there, particularly post COVID too.
The rise of like alternative social media terrifies me. Like, if we get to a point where, you know, Republicans and Democrats already don't speak to each other very well, if we get to the point where we are on our own sort of ideologically separated platforms, I think it's devastating. I will say, because I'm so concerned about this, I signed up for Parler just to like keep tabs on what was happening. I've checked it all of about once. The signing up for Parler process was a nightmare. It like the tech was terrible. It's a terrible platform. So I'm not sure that Parler poses much of a threat. You know, if that were to happen, and maybe it can't because these companies are just too big and everybody's on them. But I think that's a terrifying prospect, because that's at least the one place we all are, even if we're living in our own silos within them. We're at least under the same roof.
It's I'm going to try, one of my goals, if much as possible, is to, and we haven't been doing it recently, but I want to be better about helping our audience members eat their vegetables, you know, and like you come to hear news that is, that I think you need to know, we all need to know. And it's terrifying for me. And I think you too, you're saying, is like, I consider myself a well-informed voter or citizen, but there's times I'm just like, I don't think I'm getting the right perspectives here. And it's hard. You're one of the best people I know in like trying to find new sources of info and always reading and always trying to better yourself and learn.
Well, I will say I don't go to any institutions to know what I want to know. I go to individuals.
You go to people.
And that's
right?
What's striking. Yeah. And I no longer go to any institutions.
There's pros and cons to that, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of pros in some ways, but there's some cons. You just, it's one human, right? There's a lot of power for personality. Okay. Carl, last prediction.
Ooh, last prediction. I think security deposits are going to become a thing of the past. Whether that happens entirely in 2021, I won't say, but I think we are going to see their descent into obsolescence.
And so this in the big cities, if you have to do a security deposit in your apartment, they're going away.
Yep. And this is a bit of a personal project. This is something I'm working on at my company. So this was a selfish pick, but I actually think
it's
true.
That is selfish.
I think
you're shilling for Kairos.
Oh, you shilled and Andrew shilled. We're all shilling.
We shilled for Freshly, which is very good. And this is a fun podcast. But yeah.
We're all just shills. There are $45 billion in security deposits locked up around the country right now, which is a fascinating number that I did not know. $45 billion.
Dang.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is
That's a Harvard endowment plus a
few billion. Yeah. It's bigger than the Harvard endowment. And it's our money sitting in escrow accounts.
And landlords, it can't get interest, right? It can't invest it, right?
Well, so this is what I'm going to say. Landlords aren't even – it benefits landlords because they stay protected from damages to their property. But they can't earn interest on it. So the only thing it's doing is protecting them. But there are other ways to do that. So for instance, when you lease a car, you don't put down a security deposit. You get car insurance. And, you know, so again, I'm working with a company that does this. It's an insurance alternative to security deposits. I'm renting an apartment right now. I'm going through the process. I'm choosing to use Rhino and to use a monthly insurance payment plan as opposed to a security deposit because I don't want that money locked up. And by the way, 1 in 4 renters don't get their security deposit back. This is another industry that is, to me, just ripe for disruption. Once you start thinking about it, you can't unthink it.
It's ridiculous.
Like once you realize security deposits make no sense, you like can't unlearn that information. And then anytime
looking for an apartment now, it's terrible. You're like, I owe you what and why? And what are you going to do with that money? You're just going to sit on it to make sure I'm not an asshole, right?
Right. And you know, you get it.
There's other ways to do that.
When you're introduced to the concept, you're like, I guess this is just how it works. And it should not have to be that way. So I think this concept of replacing security deposits makes way too much sense. You keep the landlord protected. Renters don't have to lock up their money for eternity until they buy a home, basically. And it makes way too much sense to not gain traction. It's going to happen.
Okay. So Carly, your predictions to recap, you've got an executive order canceling student loan, $10K in federal student loan debt.
Yep.
Robinhood screwing over millennials. And security deposits going away. By the end of the year, no more security, or just starts to go away?
No. You're going to see the rise in the obsolescence. I love that word, of security deposits.
Obsolescence, wow. For those of you who didn't go to whatever liberal institution Carly crawled out of, obsolescence means
out of date. It's a form of obsolete.
And my predictions are we reopen in September 2021. Our educational institutions, as we know them, start to change, and new media players are going to start to arise. And Andrews, as you know, ranked choice voting, cash relief, and a third party coming out. So this is pretty tight. This is kind of a cool situation. Let's end with I'll give you one more, Carl. Give me a fun one that's less serious than security deposits, obsolescence.
Taylor Swift, my girl, she came out with 2 albums in quarantine, as we all should know by this point. I'm saying she does something really cool and different and creative when things open up again, like some sort of like outdoor, intimate, secret folklore evermore concert, because they're both very like
socially distant, or is this
no, we're talking the world opens up again, it's all safe.
Okay.
And she like, you know, I see her on like a lawn chair, like with flowing hair, like strumming an acoustic guitar, and like nobody knows about it until it breaks on social media like 3 months later.
We're running this back in December of 2021.
Okay.
Just to hold us accountable,
who's the most right?
And then my prediction is that the Bills, Buffalo Bills, go to the AFC championship. I want to say they're going to win the Super Bowl.
Oh,
but I feel like
that.
I jinx
Be
it.
Bold.
I'm gonna jinx. I don't want to jinx it. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to bet on this thing because we have to. That's the way this works. We're going to put some skin in the game. And it'll be a long time between now and then, but we will check in on these. So, and Andrew doesn't know, but I'm going to commit him to whatever we wager. So what we're going to do is we're going to ask you guys what you think we should bet, and then we'll circle back next week and decide. So if you have an idea what we should bet, if we think Carly should, I don't know, have to wear a Josh Allen jersey and run around football pads.
Okay. And you have to wear then a Taylor Swift t-shirt or something.
Maybe we could do this. I'm just saying. So these are the crazy ideas. What does Andrew do? Andrew has to
wear a Josh Allen and Taylor Swift.
Yeah, he has to do both. He has to sing a Taylor Swift song and a Josh Allen jersey. I don't know. So use the hashtag YangSpeaksWager. That's where we go with. Hashtag YangSpeaksWager. And give us your thoughts on Twitter, on Instagram. I'll look at both. Carly will look at both. We'll find the good ones.
YangSpeaksWager. All right.
YangSpeaksWager. We'll make him do something stupid. Well, Yang's probably going to be right.
Andrew, of course. Andrew's favorite
do something stupid.
Taylor Swift song, I'm pretty sure, is I Don't Want to Live Forever.
Really?
We learned this on the campaign. Well, it was funny because on the campaign trail, on the presidential campaign trail, he would always be like, this one's for Carly, because he knew I loved Taylor Swift. And it would always be, I Don't Want to Live Forever. So my hypothesis is that happened to be Andrew's also favorite Taylor Swift song.
So a lot of people don't know this, but is that, like, if you're listening to this whole episode, you're getting some Easter eggs. It's great. So Andrew would love to DJ, especially in the early days when we would drive our own car back and forth from New Hampshire. And he only had, like, a handful of basically songs from the 80s, like the 80s, from his college days, 80s and 90s, like downloaded on his phone because he had like iTunes essentially on his phone. So we would listen to like Jet Black Heart and The Script and not The Script. Who did he love?
Like there's like a Melissa Etheridge. I feel like there's like a Melissa Etheridge song he loves. Like I feel like, didn't he like Barracuda? I feel like he loves the song Barracuda.
Like all the, like it was just like Yang's deep cut, deep tracks. Like these songs, like what are we listening to? What was
his
favorite
band? He has like some good Angry Men. He's got like some Angry Men that like sing passionately.
He does have pretty cool music taste. But,
he does, yes.
All right, for those who made it, these are our bold predictions for 2021. Would love to hear your predictions as well. You can always use Ask Yank Speaks as a hashtag to tell us, but I really want you to use Yank Speaks Wager and let's bet on these bad boys and tell us what idiotic things we could do. I really want Carly to do the dumb stuff because I'm definitely going to be right. Thank you all for listening. We love you to death. Have a happy new year. Let's please, for the love of God, make 2021 better than 2020. Bye, guys.
Amen. Happy New Year.